Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. Today on Route 51, the talk turns to taxes and the Wisconsin state budget as we discuss what Governor Walker calls the blueprint for prosperity. $500 million in tax cuts passed on Tuesday by the state Senate, with $406 million in property tax cuts and $98 million in income tax cuts. The governor and his supporters say finally the state is moving to provide some much-needed relief from Wisconsin's historically high taxes. But critics charge that the tax cuts are fiscally irresponsible. They say they could lead to dangerous deficits. I'm Glenn Moberg. Joining us at the top of this show from Madison, Lieutenant Governor Rebecca Clayfish, who has been hosting a series of tax roundtables around the state, including one scheduled tomorrow in Rhinelander, with Secretary of Revenue Rick Chandler at 10:30 a.m. That's at Nicolay College. Now, here in our Wisconsin Public Radio studios in Wausau, we have two regional lawmakers on the show today, Assemblywoman Katrina Shankland of Stevens Point and Republican Assemblyman Bob Culp of Stratford. As always, we invite you to join the conversation. You can weigh in at 1-800-780-9742. That phone number again is 1-800-780-9742. You can also post a question on the Route 51 Facebook page, and I will read it live on the air. Lieutenant Governor Clayfish, thanks so much for being with us today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Now, you've got one of these tax reform roundtables scheduled for tomorrow morning at 10:30 at Nicolay College in Rhinelander. Tell us about that.
Well, the Secretary of Revenue, Rick Chandler, and I, as you mentioned earlier, have been traveling the state of Wisconsin because the governor is committed to lowering the overall tax burden for Wisconsinites. But what we don't know is what that actually looks like and feels like for everyday Wisconsinites. A lot of small business owners and families are doing budgets, and we need to know what tax relief, what tax reform looks like to them. And so we're asking them. We're traveling the state holding these tax reform roundtables where we're bringing together anywhere between 10 and 30 people at a round table, literally, to have a conversation about tax reform and the future of economic competitiveness in our state. They have led to some terrific discussions and even the addition of a digital tool. So if you can't make it to one of these roundtables, you can still give us your thoughts and opinions on taxreform.wi.gov.
So anybody can attend the roundtable tomorrow?
Sure, if you have time, 10:30 to 12:30 tomorrow at Nicolay. We'd love to see you there. And if you don't have that time, like I said, taxreform.wi.gov will give you the same PowerPoint presentation that Secretary Chandler will be giving tomorrow in Rhinelander. And then you'll also see some of the coverage that has been given to these tax reform roundtables throughout the state. But this is our lucky number 13th roundtable, so we would love for folks to come out.
How do you choose the people who are actually sitting at that table with you?
Well, we don't. We reach out to local partners who we think will have some good opportunities, some good lists to reach people. So local farm bureaus, local chambers of commerce, local veterans organizations, in order to bring people to the table, because we can't be in every community every day. We know that the folks on the front lines of their communities hopefully will have the contact necessary in order to get people to that table. There are a couple other demographic-based roundtables that we've done where we've reached out to specific organizations. So we did one for students, and we actually held it at a college. We did one that Representative Shanklin actually attended in Stevens Point, specifically geared towards seniors. We did it at a senior center, hoping that folks who actually spend their time there will take a little time out of their day, attend, and give us their thoughts and feedback on tax reform.
Well, at that roundtable discussion in Stevens Point, what did the elderly people tell you?
Well, there was a variety of opinions expressed, and you know, there were some opinions on tax reform, which is what we're really trying to focus on, and then there were some opinions on other things that have happened over the last couple of years. But some of the things that we took away were very consistent, believe it or not, with what we've gotten across demographics and across geography. One, taxes are too high. We already knew that. We're number 10 in the nation for our tax burden. It's why the governor has asked us to do this project in the very first place. Taxes are too complicated. We heard that. And one of the specific ideas that came out of that one in particular was, you know, is there a way, is there a method where you could help us as retirees, as seniors, stay here in Wisconsin? Can you not tax our 401ks? Are there benefits beyond what you're doing for veterans on their pensions? Can you help the average Wisconsin senior stay right here near their grandchildren? And those are some of the things that we're looking deeply into as we move forward.
You know, property taxes are particularly onerous on the elderly because they're on a fixed income, and if you don't have that income coming in on a regular basis, sometimes the tax burden that you have, even if you've paid your mortgage already, is so high that you have to sell your house.
Glenn, you're right. And we've seen people forced into making decisions that they don't want to make. You know, you spend your whole life working for, you know, what you believe to be the American dream in your own household. And then by the time you do get a chance to retire and you want to enjoy your life, sometimes you have to sell a house that you've worked your entire life to be able to afford and enjoy in retirement. And sometimes seniors choose to, not only for climate, move to a different state, like a Texas or a Florida or an Arizona, but, you know, sometimes they're choosing states, particularly like Florida or Nevada, states that have no income tax. And we've got to be more competitive, not just for business, but also for keeping our seniors here. And you're right, that does mean driving down our property tax burden. And the governor is committed to driving down the overall tax burden. And so we imagine that we'll see a lot of seniors saying property tax is the one that's driving me nuts. Right now, it's about 50-50 for what we have seen. About half the people that we talk to at these roundtables and those who are emailing us at taxreform.wi.gov, which if you have a moment today, we'd love for you to stop by and give us a piece of your mind. But half the folks are saying property tax is driving them craziest. And the other half is saying income tax is driving them nuts. I understand why, because we are among the highest tax states in the nation for both of those. For property tax, we're number 10 in the country. For income tax, we're number 12 in the country. But the percentages above the average are so great that it puts our entire tax burden at the 10th worst in the nation, despite the fact that our sales tax is number 35 in the country. So here's another theme we've noticed. In just about every single one of these tax reform roundtables, someone organically, having no idea what has been said in these other roundtables in different geographic regions, someone will come up with the idea of, let's turn down either the property or the income tax, and let's turn up correspondingly the sales tax. Or, you know, let's turn up the sales tax and then turn down government spending in order to make one of those other taxes less onerous. You're at the radio station, you get this analogy. A lot of people at home will too. Imagine an old-fashioned radio where you've got the volume, the tuner, and then the bass and the treble, all on dials. Now imagine replacing all of those names with property tax on one dial, income tax on another, and then sales tax on another one, and then the last one, government spending. What we want to know is, how do you set your dials?
Well, Rebecca, the proposal that the governor is putting forward has been criticized by some Democrats who say that the tax cuts could hurt the state's finances. Senate Minority Leader Chris Larson of Milwaukee called it a borrow-and-spend plan. Senator Lena Taylor of Milwaukee said the state's debt stood at $213 million when the governor came into office, an increase to $658 million. And Senator Kathleen Vinehout of Alma said the governor is being irresponsible as the steward of the people's money by cutting taxes right now. How do you respond to those critics?
Okay, so there are a few different things that we're talking about right here. And so let me make sure that all of our listeners know what we're talking about. The tax reform roundtables and the project that we're working on tomorrow in Rhinelander and the taxreform.wi.gov, that's for broad, long-range tax reform, something robust and for the future, potentially for the 2015 to 2017 budget. That's not what these legislators are talking about. What these legislators are talking about is the governor's blueprint for prosperity, which is another form of tax relief. When that is signed into law, the governor will have signed about $2 billion in tax relief into law. Now, what they're concerned about is what they call a structural deficit. It's a term that's been really politicized over the last couple of months since the governor rolled out the Blueprint for Prosperity in his State of the State address. Real quick, the Blueprint for Prosperity will give the average homeowner about $101 in tax relief. The average income taxpayer, $58 in tax relief. And then we did about $322.6 million in what we call withholding changes. You get a paycheck, the government kind of sweeps off the top, withholds money right off the top of your paycheck, so you never get to see it, you never get to spend it right off the bat, the government takes it. We made some changes to withholding, seeing, of course, that families were doing better, small businesses were doing better, and we're ending up with these surpluses at the end of the year. And so we want the government to withhold less of your money.
Right, it's but how do you respond to people who say that we can't afford that right now because we've got this structural deficit of $658 million?
Right. So that portion is going to be about $57.90, the average family, for going back in your paycheck starting next month. So you add all that together for the average family starting in April, that's going to be about $681. Now, that's the blueprint for prosperity. People are saying that that type of tax relief will end up causing a structural deficit. Let me explain what a structural deficit is. It is taking your bills into account, but then essentially not taking your next paycheck into account. So if you have a mortgage, a lot of your listeners are going to have a mortgage. Have you ever had a mortgage, Glenn?
Well, yeah, of course.
Okay, so if you have a mortgage, you have a structural deficit.
All right, but
nobody
is,
panics and nobody freaks out because you know you're going to get paid. Right,
but
you know
isn't,
that.
Is, Rebecca, isn't this dependent on revenues coming in that are based on projections? And what if those projections are wrong? For 10 years, starting in 2001, we had very rosy projections of the amount of revenue that would be coming into the coffers. Those projections were wrong, and we ended up having to make huge budget cuts and have huge tax increases because we thought we were going to be getting more money than we got. Todd
right.
Berry of,
so
of the Taxpayers
the
Alliance.
Between accurate predictions and what these folks are calling the structural deficit. The structural deficit takes into account only what you're getting now, not any projections based on growth. And it does take into account all of your growing bills. So you know that your mortgage is going to be X number of dollars, but it essentially takes into account, you know, what you're making today instead of what you're going to be making in the next paycheck. And I just told you, you know, next paycheck, folks are going to expect more in their paycheck, right? Because we made those withholding changes. But that's just what that does for your personal finances. It gets amplified through megaphone when it comes to the state's budget because we're talking about millions and billions of dollars. But if you take a look at the growth rate, the actual growth rate, not projections, but the actual growth rate of our economy over the last 10 years, we grew at 3.8%. That takes into account not only the dip after 9/11, but this deep recession. So even in bad times, our economy grew. So if we grew at just that rate, that, you know, kind of sluggish pace over the last 10 years, if we applied just that growth rate, we would wipe out that structural deficit and actually end up with a structural surplus.
So you're saying the revenue projections are accurate?
I'm saying not only are we accurate in our accounting, but if we have a sluggish growth rate, we will grow out of a deficit and end up with another surplus.
Okay. When I moved here from Illinois 21 years ago, I really worried about paying higher property taxes.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
My realtor at the time told me, the high taxes we pay in Wisconsin, these are her exact words, she said, that's the price we pay for living in paradise. Her exact words. She said,
I love your realtor.
Well, she wanted to sell me a house, of course, but she said the high taxes allow us to have great schools with great teachers, great roads, clean air and water, tough environmental protection, so we have the best hunting and fishing in the world. Isn't there a cost to our quality of life by cutting taxes?
I don't think so, because what right now we're talking about is growing out of a recession. And that's what we've seen in the last couple of years, right? Government budgeted for X number of dollars, but Y number of dollars actually came in. Because more people are going to work, that means more people are paying income tax. Because more people are spending their paychecks, folks are paying more in sales taxes. Because the economy is doing better, more people are buying homes and then paying property taxes. The government only budgeted for a certain amount. That's why last year, $759 million over what we budgeted for came in. That's what's called a surplus. And then this year again, $911.9 million over what we even budgeted for came in. So Wisconsin is growing. Folks are going back to work. We're moving forward. That's all good news, and we're excited about that. But you're right, government does need revenue. And even if you are the world's most hardcore constitutional conservative, you got to admit that the Constitution says a couple things in there that there are core functions of government.
And you've got to balance that budget.
And we need to fund it. What we need to do right now is find the sweet spot. And that's why we're asking people. We're saying, what does your sweet spot look like? We want to know where you set your tax dial so that you feel like you're getting a good value for your tax dollar, but also that we're not absolutely pinching you to the point where you feel like you're not getting what you're paying for.
Okay. Lieutenant Governor Clayfish, I just got one more tough question for you, and then I'm going to ask Bob Culp and Katrina Shanklin to ask you a question.
Sure.
Could you answer critics, and this is a budgetary question, who say it was irresponsible, some of them even say it was cruel, for the governor to refuse to accept the Medicaid expansion money from the federal government? 90,000 of our low-income citizens not getting the medical care they need. Other Republican governors, Chris Christie and John Kasich, accepted that money, which wouldn't cost the state anything. Your critics say, why not do the right thing, both for the state's finances and the poor people in Wisconsin, and accept that Medicaid money?
See, the funny thing is those critics don't ever talk about the fact that those people are, in fact, covered. And it was Jim Doyle's administration that put an artificial cap on those who could receive Medicaid in Wisconsin. See, the Doyle administration covered people up to 300% of the poverty level. And because so many people rushed onto that program, you had the poorest of the poor, those folks who were in desperate need of help, a safety net, some way to get the medical care that they not only deserved, but they needed. You had those folks on a waiting list. Today in Wisconsin, you have a governor who has said there will be no more waiting lists for Medicaid. What we're going to do is we're going to cover folks up to 100% of the poverty level, and those 100% to 300% of the poverty level are going to move on to the Obamacare exchanges, because that was the intention of the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act.
Well, the intention
sure
of the act.
Folks got care. And for those folks who are the working poor, those folks who were on Badger Care before, but who now will be moving to the exchanges, there are subsidies available for those people.
Well, the intention
Wisconsin
of the act
ends up being the only state, the only one in the country where everyone is covered.
Lieutenant Governor, the intention of the act was for the states to accept that Medicaid money. You would have been forced to accept that if the Supreme Court hadn't ruled the way they did. I mean, the Medicaid expansion was supposed to be a core part of the Affordable Care Act.
But the Supreme Court ruled that there was opportunity for states to have flexibility. The governor not only has covered everyone, those on Medicaid and those in the exchanges and those in private health care plans as well, but the governor has assured that taxpayers are not going to be on the hook for generations of federal money with strings attached.
Got it.
You know, it's funny. I travel around the state doing these tax reform roundtables. And one of the things that people are deeply concerned about is transportation funding, right? Because we want to make sure that we've got really great infrastructure. A lot of people are noticing what infrastructure looks like during the winter, you know, when it's before the repairs that are going to be needed. And so people are asking, what are we going to do well into the future on transportation funding? Why don't we install tolls? You know, we got to get those folks from Illinois and Minnesota and Michigan who are visiting here. Why don't we do that? And I explained to them, back in the 1950s, when Wisconsin accepted federal money to build our interstates, it had strings attached. Wisconsin cannot install toll roads. A lot of people don't know that. Federal money comes with strings attached. And sometimes the federal government uses those strings to yank that money right back.
Okay. Lieutenant,
the governor protected Wisconsin taxpayers from having the federal government pull the rug right out from under us.
Rebecca, thanks so much, and I'm going to have Katrina Shankland ask you a question now, and then Bob Culp. Katrina?
Sure.
Thank you. Hi, Lieutenant Governor. You mentioned that we were at the same tax reform roundtable in Stevens Point, and we heard from the same people. And I want to say that, you know, I saw a lot of my constituents who were concerned about, first of all, the structural deficit, as well as the highest debt payments on record. And what I want to ask you is, you know, these people were the same people who said they want to pay taxes. When their business is doing well and they pay a lot of taxes, it means the economy is going in a good place and they're able to add jobs. Do you think that cutting taxes at the expense of our basic goods and services, which my constituents said they want to pay for, in terms of adding on $100 million to the already $725 million structural deficit, is a responsible thing to do right now when we're trying to grow jobs?
Representative, you're right. We were at the exact same thing, and I'm pretty sure you're probably talking about the three women who were in the front row with you, some of them who had electoral paraphernalia on. They kind of identified their beliefs. And so I was excited to hear about their tax reform solutions. What instead I heard was folks who really wanted value for their tax dollars. And that's not unique to one party or the other. And that's why these tax reform roundtables are so important. So we find that sweet spot. We find the place where people feel like they're getting a value for their tax dollar, but that they aren't being squeezed. The one thing that wasn't addressed by those who said that they were happy to pay more taxes was how we get out of the top 10 of a bad list. Right now, there are companies and there are job creators who will not even consider our state.
But we're in the top 10 of the worst list for job creation. We're 37th
in the
nation.
United States of America. We owe it to our taxpayers, to our constituents, to get off the top 10 of a bad list.
Let me move to Bob Culp. Representative Culp, you have a question for Lieutenant Governor
Clayton. I certainly do, and Lieutenant Governor, thanks for joining us this morning. I know that everybody in the Capitol is a cheerleader for the state, but I can't think of anyone who is more of a cheerleader. So I'll just make it easy for you and give you a multiple choice. Why would you want to move to Wisconsin? Is it the excellent people, the good, vibrant economy, the quality of life, the great outdoors, or great teachers? And you can only pick one.
I don't know, but I think you, Bob, could give some advice to Glenn's realtor even now from way back, because those are extraordinary choices. But if I had to pick one that really encompasses all the rest, it's Wisconsin's people, the finest in the nation, the strongest in the nation, and now some of the most prosperous in the nation.
Thanks a lot. That makes a lot of sense to me, too.
Lieutenant Governor Clayfish, you've been very generous with your time today. Thanks so much for that. And once again, you've got this roundtable discussion on future tax reform, not on the governor's blueprint, going on tomorrow in Rhinelander at Nicolay College at 10:30 a.m. And again, if folks want to attend, what do they need to do?
Well, they can either pop onto our website, and please do this regardless, taxreform.wi.gov. Give us your thoughts and opinions there, or you can get the address there. And, Glenn, we'll also pass that address on to your producers, so maybe you can get it up on your website. But it is at Nicolay Technical College, and it's going to be at the Northwoods Center. That's tomorrow at 10:30, and you're also welcome to call the office at any time if you have any concerns about tax reform or any other issue. That number is 608-266-3516.
And our producer is nodding at me in the other room, so we will get that up on our Facebook page.
Oh, thank you.
And Lieutenant Governor Rebecca Clayfish, thanks so much for being with us, and good luck at the roundtable discussion tomorrow.
Sounds good. Thanks.
I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network. When we return, Representative Bob Culp and Representative Katrina Shanklin will be taking your calls and questions at 1-800-780-9742. Back after this.
Thank you to the business sponsors who help support WPR programs. Businesses like D.B. Reinhardt Institute for Ethics, Access Prosthetics, and Gimme Shelter play a huge role in the success of WPR. Your business can too. More information at WPR.org/sponsor. Support also comes from Wausau's Woodson Art Museum, presenting two magical exhibitions, From Houdini to Hugo, The Art of Brian Selznick, and historic lithographs and props from the American Museum of Magic, on view through April 6th. More at lywam.org.
I'm Glenn Moberg. We're back on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network. Many thanks to Lieutenant Governor Rebecca Clayfish, who joined us for the first part of the program. She, again, is hosting a roundtable on tax reform. Anybody can attend. It's tomorrow morning at Nicolet College in Rhinelander. It's at 10:30 a.m., and you can get more information on that on our Route 51 Facebook page. That is also where you can post a question for Representatives Bob Culp, a Republican from Stratford, and Katrina Shanklin, a Democrat from Stevens Point, who are with us for the remainder of the hour. Or you can call us with your question. We'll put it live on the air at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Bob Culp and Katrina Shanklin, your reaction to Governor Walker's tax cut plans, his budget proposals, and what he calls the blueprint for prosperity. We'll start with you, Katrina.
All right. Well, I'll say first and foremost, if we're going to do tax reform, we need to target it to the middle class and the low income. We need to stop looking at these wealthy giveaways, which we had in the 2011 and 2012 budget, $2 billion given out to the already wealthy. We need to focus on the growing income inequality in Wisconsin. The Center on Wisconsin Strategy and Wisconsin Budget Project actually just came out with an absolutely shocking report that shows that income inequality in Wisconsin is increasing at a faster rate than the nation as a whole. I'm really concerned about that. And they actually uncovered that over the past 30 years, all growth in income in Wisconsin has gone to the 1%. We need to be focusing on growing the middle class, on helping the people who are low income earners into getting into the middle class. And I'm concerned that these tax cuts do nothing to get those people into the middle class to grow jobs. And in fact, they actually will just end up cutting our services in the long run, because the tax cut will add $100 million to our already $725 million structural deficit. That's at a time when Wisconsin has its highest debt payments on record. More than 5% of our total budget goes just to debt. So we need to look at being fiscally responsible. We need to look at what's best for all of the residents of Wisconsin, not just the wealthy few. And we need to work on growing the middle class and creating jobs. Unfortunately, I don't think this plan does it.
Bob Culp?
And I would beg to differ. If you look at the numbers, which I've had the opportunity to do, look at the comprehensive annual financial reports for the last 16 years, there's a couple of points that I take. And this isn't a debate. This is a free-flowing format. But the concept that this tax cut is targeted to the wealthy is simply not true, because the lowest income bracket is the only income bracket that's affected, taking the tax rate from 4.4% down to 4% for those who earn, I think it's $10,500 more or less So if you pay taxes, you will get an income cut. Income tax cut. And the same thing is true with the property taxes. It is a straight across the board. Now, it's true if you own more property, you will get more dollars back, but it is exactly the same percentage straight across the board. And we're one of the states with a progressive tax rate. And why there is a greater disparity of income inequality, it certainly is an issue across the country, without a doubt. But this is the most fair of the ways that you could take a tax cut. Plus the fact that if you put it into perspective, the structural deficit is something that is, as Lieutenant Governor indicated, you're not taking into account the additional revenues that you're getting. And if you look at a chart, and I do have a chart, we're on radio, of course, so I can't show it, but this is the past 16 years of revenue increases. Lieutenant Governor is exactly right. There's been a 3.8% growth rate. The Legislative Fiscal Bureau, in my conversations with Bob Lang down there, who runs the place, they can only flatline from last year's income. They can never take into account any growth in the economy or in the revenues. If there's 3.8% growth, as there has been, it will take a $500-600 million budget deficit and turn it into a surplus again. We're talking percentage points. This is the way a business is managed, and it's the way it's managed at the state, and we are in incredibly good hands. If you look at the numbers, as I've had the opportunity to do extensively, you would be incredibly pleased with how the state is functioning.
Bob, how much of your business do you spend on debt payments per year? Do you know a percentage of your budget?
More than 5%.
Okay. Well, this is the highest that the state has ever had. Usually, according to the Legislative Fiscal Bureau, it should be 4% of our total GPR. That's about a $72 billion budget. So we're at 5% of our total GPR being spent on just bonds. Our highest bonded indebtedness is this year. So if we're looking at just fiscal conservatism, fiscal conservatism, as well as not spending more money, that's what this budget is doing. That's what these tax giveaways are doing. Now, let me just point out one other thing. When we look at who is getting how much of the taxes, let's look at the alternative minimum tax. This is something that benefits wealthy filers. This ensures that they actually have to pay some tax. We cut through the Blueprint for Prosperity $50 million from that so that they have to pay $50 million less. These are only wealthy people. So, you know, to argue that this is the fairest that it could possibly be, where the state of Wisconsin is giving $50 million away to the already wealthy, and I think that's fiscally irresponsible as well.
One of the things that we do at the state level is often talk in terms of millions and billions, and we really, I think, miss the mark in doing that. And so what I needed to do as a small business guy coming into the state is to actually just take six zeros off the state budget. And that puts it into perspective for me. So when you hear $50 million given away, it seems like a ton of money. Reality of it is, it is to each and every one of us. I do not want to minimize that. But the overall state budget, I've asked literally dozens of people what they think that is. And I've not gotten any answers from anybody other than people who are budget wonks. The overall state budget is $35 billion. So let's whack six zeros per year. Mm-hmm. Let's whack six zeros off of that, and we get $35,000. Now, most of us can remember when we probably made, or maybe we still do make, that much. So if you do the same thing to the $50 million, and thinking of this as a household budget, you end up with $50. So what we're talking about is, are we managing the state correctly? And I believe beyond a shadow of a doubt that we are managing the state very, very, very well. And if you look at the overall debt, it has gone down this past year, the year ending in 2013. June 30th, 2013, as well as our retirement fund has gone up by $17,000, again, knocking off the six zeros over the course of the last number of years. We are in incredibly good shape.
Okay.
Don't let anybody tell you anything else.
Let's continue with that analogy, Bob. You said it's okay for us to give $50 million to the wealthy, and you said, you know, that's basically $50 that we're giving out to the people who are already wealthy. Well, to put that in perspective, the working poor and the middle class are sitting there waiting for their handout, and they're not getting it, but the rich are. And explain to me how that's okay, that the state of Wisconsin is prioritizing our wealthy earners over the people who are struggling to get into the middle class, because that's a tax giveaway.
And again, I would just say that I didn't realize it was going to be a debate format, but Katrina, I always enjoy doing that. The bottom line of it is, if you look at the tax cuts that are in what the Senate passed yesterday, it is a straight across the board, and it actually does not discriminate. If you pay taxes, you will get an income tax cut. I've looked at it, and if you pay property tax, you will get a straight across the board percentage tax cut. That's it.
Why give the wealthy any tax breaks at all?
if you have a progressive tax rate, which we already do as far as income goes, sure, we could tax the rich, but whatever you tax, you get less of. If you want less income, you would tax it at a higher rate. And it has always been proven in John F. Kennedy's, I know this national level, in Reagan's tax cuts, that taking taxes down, and we're not talking draconian cuts, we're talking giving a couple of percent back. The concept that this is irresponsible is somebody that simply hasn't looked at the numbers is making those statements.
Well, it's a controversial proposal, you know, the idea that you can cut taxes and increase revenue. Mm-hmm. And it's being debated a lot. And has been for 40 or 50 years mm-hmm. now.
So let's look at some of the services that have been cut in the past 3 years. I'm really concerned about this. This is actually why I ran for office. So, you know, cutting our way to prosperity, I don't think that's a possibility when our basic services that our citizens rely on are being cut left and right. Let's just put this in perspective. $1.6 billion have been cut to our public schools. That is the most historic cut on record for the state of Wisconsin. Our students deserve better. $72 million of cuts to the technical college system when the current administration talks all the time about workforce training. $250 million cut to the UW system at a time when student loan debt is at its highest, $1 trillion in the nation. Okay, $76 million cuts to our shared revenue, which is state aid to local municipal governments. This is what they pay for public safety, to live in a good community. And then also we cut, unfortunately, two tax credits that our working poor and middle class rely on, and that's the homestead and earned income tax credit, $70 million. If you add this all up, we've cut tens of millions, if not billions of dollars from the people who most need it, from our students, from the teachers, from our public schools, from the homestead and earned income tax credit. And now we're saying, you know what? This new so-called surplus is great. This shows success, but all we've done is eliminated the strength of our services at the expense of our students, at the expense of their future, at the expense of the state's workforce. So I don't think you can cut your way to prosperity. I think the middle class is hurting. I think people are desperately crying out for jobs, for income security, and that's what they need right now.
Let's give Bob a chance to respond, then we got to move on.
And there certainly is the cuts to the entities that you mentioned. Certainly that's not a good thing. And I've been in tech colleges and schools, and it was at the job center in Wausau this morning. And there's no doubt that those things have put strain and pressure on them. On the other hand, they found ways to be innovative and creative within that structure. And if I look out at people who actually create jobs, the small business people in the state, I walked into a auto repair shop in Abbotsford a week and a half ago, and I just walked in the door. He knew who I was, and he said, "You have to cut property and income taxes." So everyone is undergoing squeezes. Everything is transforming, whether it's the medical community, the school community, the business community. We have to adapt, and we have to make this state prosperous, and I think we're doing that.
What is the most onerous tax, the state income tax, the sales tax, or the property tax? Bob, you go first.
I don't know that there's a specific one that I would consider most onerous. They are, it probably is more the little nagging fees and taxes that all of us pay that we don't think about. One of my personal passions is actually the personal property tax angle. And that isn't if you own real property. That's if you have a business that's not manufacturing ag or ag. You pay year after year on trucks and equipment and furnishings. The grocers, for instance, if you have a grocery store, you pay every year taxes on your coolers. And there's some real problems in my way of thinking. And Glenn, you were telling me as I walked in that you did your taxes, and my guess is that that is probably part of your aggravation.
For those of you who don't know, my wife owns a jewelry store, and yes, personal property taxes come into play because all of the equipment that we have in the store gets taxed.
Year after year after
correct,
year.
Correct. Same question to you, Katrina Shankland. What's the most onerous tax, the state income tax, the sales tax, or the property tax?
Well, I think if you look at the long-term security of people, we want to make sure people can stay in their homes. So I would say property tax. And now what I want to say is we need to look at a different formula for sustainable funding of our public schools. Minnesota has a three-legged stool, meaning they don't just rely on general purpose revenue and property taxes like how our state does. They actually tax corporations a fair tax to pay for their public schools in addition to the other two sources of funding. I think we need to look at a better model so that our schools aren't just funded on state revenue, which sometimes, as we know, can get cut. I just highlighted those cuts, as well as property taxes. I think property taxes are one that should go in the mix, but we also need to think long term about sustainably funding our technical colleges and our public schools, which are currently funded mostly through property taxes and then through state revenue.
Should Governor Walker have accepted the state Medicaid money? Katrina, you go first, then Bob.
Absolutely. When I look at it, I think from an economic standpoint, he absolutely should have. Number one, we are currently paying over $100 million to cover 80,000 fewer people. So we're paying more in taxes right now to ensure that less people in our state have health care. Not only is that morally wrong, it's economically wrong. From a moral standpoint, I've heard from a lot of constituents who have, you know, struggled to pay the premiums for their health care because they should be covered by BadgerCare. They should be covered by that Medicaid expansion. And when the governor chose not to accept that money, which is our tax money, the money that we pay to the federal government that should come back to us, but is instead going to other states, I think, you know, first of all, there's huge problems with the fact that we're leaving people out in the cold. The exchanges were never meant for people who make $11,500, but that's where people who are living in poverty in our state are going. So now, in addition to trying to figure out, you know, should I put gas in my car to get to work or food on the table for me and my children, these people are also going to have to negotiate between rates.
Bob Culp.
And I'll answer first what Katrina said about the formula for funding in Minnesota. You won't get to the point where you have a prosperous state if you do that on the backs of business. Minnesota has a number of other components that really weigh in that change the dynamics there, and I could go into that, but it'd be a whole different debate. Should the governor have accepted the federal funding? No. And the reason is because long-term sustainable, it is not. We know that the federal government is in much worse condition, and I can again lay out the parameters for you. I won't go into that at this point because we've got other topics to cover here. But Katrina said $100 million. Again, let's take six zeros off on a $35,000 income. You've got $100 that we would have accepted. For a pittance, we would have sold our ability to determine our future, our unique Wisconsin future and heritage, the ability to make our own decisions, and we would have been tied in with the federal government. So the governor absolutely did the correct thing.
So why do we accept any federal money for our roads or our schools? I mean, I've noticed that Republicans in the legislature and the governor are immune to certain kinds of federal government money, and it happens to be they're immune to money meant for poor people to get health care. They're not immune to money for our roads. They're not immune to money for our schools. So why is it that we can't accept federal money when we've already paid that in? It's just going to other states.
I refuse to buy that argument. I think that everyone uses roads, and it simply is not accurate to state that. I believe that everyone in Wisconsin is covered by medical care, and it was the correct decision because we get to maintain where we're going.
We're
going
to run out of time, and I want to get to a Facebook message from Eric. He's curious to know what portion of the property tax break will leak out of Wisconsin. Corporate-owned real estate with non-Wisconsin headquarters like Walmart and Target will enjoy the tax break, but how does that help Wisconsin? Why not direct such real estate tax breaks to the homestead tax credit, which we know will stay in Wisconsin and also go to the people who really need it?
That's a great question, and I agree. This property tax cut goes to everyone who owns property in Wisconsin, whether it's their second, third, fourth, fifth, tenth residence, and it could be corporate property. So I agree that, you know, the homestead tax credit is much fairer. It targets the tax relief to people who most need it, who are already struggling to stay in their homes, and it would have been a much better alternative.
Bob, just 30 seconds. We got to move on.
And I don't know how you can get more fair than a straight across the board. And property ownership, sure, that may be an issue if it's an out-of-state corporation. But think about it. They've got an investment in this state. They likely have employees in this state. They have people to take care of their properties in this state. It is an incredibly fair way to make a property tax straight across the board.
Bob Culp. He is a Republican state representative from Stratford. Katrina Shanklin, she is a Democratic state representative from Stevens Point. You guys are great. I don't even have to ask a question here. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We're going to be back to talk about a bill on renewable energy that Katrina Shanklin has introduced after this.
Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include Stevens Point Area Co-op, Peninsula Music Festival, and Import Auto Clinic. You too can help ensure the future of WPR with your business sponsorship. Find out more at WPR.org/sponsor. Support also comes from the Wisconsin Lakes Partnership, bringing their 36th annual statewide convention back to Stevens Point April 24th through 26th, with hands-on workshops, national experts, and ideas for protecting our legacy of lakes. More at WisconsinLakes.org.
I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. With us in our studio, Republican State Representative Bob Culp and Democratic State Representative Katrina Shanklin, who has introduced a green energy bill that would require Wisconsin utilities to generate 30% of their energy from renewable sources by 2030. Katrina, explain that to me, please.
Yes, this bill is called the Wisconsin Renewable Energy Act, and I'm excited and proud to be introducing it with several other legislators, including Senator Mark Miller and Representative Corey Mason. Wisconsin used to be a proud leader in renewable energy. We invested in it. We had strong energy policy. Over the last few years, we've seen that decline. We've seen Wisconsin's renewable portfolio standard, which is currently a requirement of 10% renewable energy by 2015, is in last place in the nation among all 29 states that have them. It's time to ramp things up. It's time to get back into the game. We have many, many businesses that we hear from who are asking for this, and it's time to invest in renewable energy.
Bob Culp, your reaction to Katrina Shanklin's bill.
And everyone knows that I'm all about renewable energy and have historically been. I've done solar photovoltaics, compressed natural gas.
For our listeners who aren't aware, Bob Culp owns Culps of Stratford. He is a contractor. He puts solar panels on roofs, and he has also converted his entire fleet to natural gas, which has environmental benefits.
Mm-hmm. And again, it is my belief that this makes sense, but not as a government mandate. And here's why. If we put a renewable energy standard in place that says 30% by 2030, sounds like a laudable goal. Where we're at with ranking of the 29 states that have it, certainly there are a lot of others. That's a whole different topic. But if we put that standard in place, first off, we don't have heavy water. We can't do hydro, which that would be a whole permitting issue, all of that. So we end up coming back to solar and wind. The only way to do that is really through distributed solar, which sounds good, but at the end of the day, those solar panels have a 30-year lifespan. So if I put a solar panel on my roof in 2015, in 30 years, I'm going to have to do that again. So that's 2045, I'm doing it again. By the time I meet that renewable criterion, I'm halfway through the life of that. If individuals see value in doing it, I think it makes an incredible amount of sense for them individually, but to do it as a government mandate is not the correct way to do it. And we could go on and on with this forever, Glenn.
Katrina, we'll give you a chance for a quick rebuttal here.
Yeah, this is an opportunity to diversify up your portfolio, and this isn't just wind and solar. It's also biomass and biogas. Wisconsin has a great agriculture community. We know that. Let's capitalize on it. Let's use that waste and convert it into energy. Let's do the same with our, you know, paper products and forestry. So that's what biomass and biogas would do. It isn't just about wind and solar, but also this is about thinking forward. We spend $12 billion every year out of state on energy that we import. Wisconsin really needs to look at energy independence and move toward it rather than away from it as we keep on using more and more of our energy dollars out of state. If we spend money in state on energy, we are creating jobs, jobs that cannot be outsourced, and jobs that pay well. That's what this bill does.
And my response to that would be that we need a long-term view, and society looks at this as a long-term view, and it could be some of the other options you mentioned are long-term views. I'm excited about things like Lockheed Martin is working on a power plant that is the size of a minivan that literally will put out 100 megawatts of power using atomic fusion, not fission, no waste, no issues. We need a bridge to get us to the future, but relative to, where doing it from a government perspective doesn't work that way in the real world.
Bob Culp, you've only been in office now for what, 3 months?
That's it, yep.
You've obviously gotten your feet wet. And Katrina Shankland, thank you, too, for being with us.
Thank you for the opportunity.
You both have been wonderful guests. And like I said, I hardly had to ask a question for the past half
My pleasure, and thanks a lot for having us.
We want to thank today's guests, Republican Assemblyman Bob Culp of Stratford and Democratic Assemblywoman Katrina Shankland of Stevens Point. Thanks also to Lieutenant Governor Rebecca Clayfish, who is hosting a roundtable discussion on the issue of taxes tomorrow morning in Rhinelander. That roundtable takes place at 10:30 a.m. sharp at Nicolet College, 5364 College Drive in Rhinelander. It's in the Northwood Center, room 208. Secretary of Revenue Rick Chandler will be joining the Lieutenant Governor for the discussion, and you can find out more about that on our Route 51 Facebook page. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, and our on-air producer, Jane Ritger. Thanks, as always, to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Remember to follow us on Facebook, and if you missed some of this broadcast, a reminder that Route 51 is repeated in its entirety every Friday evening at 7 o'clock on 90.9 FM Wausau, and it can be downloaded at wpr.org/Route 51. Thanks again for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin, and until next week, we're heading out of town.